are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, April the 17th, and lots of one-to-one NBA playoff series is out there. Can the Pistons even it up tonight? Probably not. But this is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in Detroit City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word. Doing this podcast a little bit out of order tonight. We've taped the rest of it already, doing the first segment last, as I don't want to be up all night after watching this Portland-Oklahoma City second half here. But today we're going to run down the Tuesday action in the playoffs, look ahead to tonight's schedule as well. I'm going to give you three adjustments that I would make if I was Dwayne Casey for the Pistons tonight. And I also have some listeners chiming in on the Google Voice line. We got to one of them. We'll push off Breeshin for another day as well. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. But the big news on this podcast, anyways, is that the Pistons will return to action on Wednesday night, tonight, an 8 p.m. game in Game 2 of the first round best-of-seven series against the top-seeded Milwaukee Bucks. The game will be on Fox Sports Detroit and also NBA TV. For the fans, if you didn't know, the Milwaukee Bucks lead the series 1-0 after the complete annihilation of the Pistons on Sunday night by 35 points. In the opener. Now, by the way, Las Vegas, maybe they know something because the line on this game for the Pistons was 15.5 yesterday. You know what it is today? 15. So Vegas believes. Do you believe, Pistons Nation? But I wanted to run down the games from Tuesday throughout the league. Bunch of 1-1 series is out there and a surprise as the only 2-0 first round series. Toronto got revenge against Orlando with a big victory, 111-82 at home, evening that one up. A 29-point win was the largest in franchise postseason history for the North. 37 points for Kawhi Leonard and 22 for Kyle Lowry after he went with the goose egg in Game 1. Also, another team with revenge in the Game 2 was the Denver Nuggets, beating the San Antonio Spurs to draw even in that one. 114-105 was the final there. Jamal Murray started the night 0-for-8 from the field, ended up scoring 21 points in the fourth quarter to finish with 24 overall in this one, one of four Denver players to get 20 or more in this one for Coach Michael Malone. So that, when you add those together with Monday's results, that means the first four series that had game twos all ended up going 1-1 as they head to the non-home court teams who now have home court advantage in this, the first round series as they head home for the next games. But in that one series that didn't go 1-1, probably the first home team to hold serve probably would have been my last pick out of all the home teams to go 2-0, and that is the Portland Trailblazers without Nurkic, 114-94 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. 62 points combined for CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard in this one. A big stat that stands out is the Thunder went 5 of 28 from 3, which was actually an improvement over Game 1. This team in two games is 10 of 61 from three-point land, 16% from beyond the arc. Now remember, before the trade deadline, a certain podcast host of a Daily Pistons podcast implored Oklahoma City to make an offer for Reggie Bullock at the deadline. I believed then and believe now that they don't have enough shooting. And I feel like the roster construction and the lack of three-point shooting is wasting another season of two of the top guys in the league together in their prime. Although I will delightfully point out that Russ was a nice little 5 of 20 in this one, 4 of 19 before making his final field goal in garbage time. So a nice little result there for Russell Westbrook in the playoffs. We'll see what Oklahoma City Thunder has left at home. I would imagine they'll be fired up to get those ones, but I do see Portland possibly getting one of two in Oklahoma, but certainly a series that I've got a close eye on, and let me know if you guys have any thoughts on that one there. If I'm the Pistons, I'm continuing my pursuit of Oklahoma City with trades this offseason. I'm going to go ahead and dangle Langston Galloway and his expiring $7 million deal for next year to those guys this offseason, trying to get a young player like a Hamidou Diallo or something like that. I don't know if Oklahoma City has trade exceptions that could make those salaries work. But this is a team that can't sign guys because they're way over the cap like they are. So they might have to make some trades to improve the roster, maybe even go further into the luxury tax. So I'm calling Oklahoma City again, sending them the box score from Tuesday night with all those three-point misses and seeing if you could possibly knock off, get something off your hands and acquire some more, you know, picks, young assets, all those kind of things that you could possibly get from Oklahoma City there. But tonight, around the league, Indiana at Boston on TNT. Boston trying to go up 2-0 in that one. Detroit at Milwaukee, as we know, 8 o'clock on NBA TV and also Fox Sports Detroit locally. And then Utah at Houston, 9:30 p.m. on TNT. We will see if Houston is able to go up 2-0 on the road in that one. But up next, I'm going to tell you what Dwayne Casey needs to do for some three adjustments that he needs to make going into Game 2 tonight against the Bucks. But you can get the Locked On Pistons podcast, as I'm stumbling up my words here, at 1:30 in the morning on the brand new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Pistons.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on, we're going to hear the voicemails from some fans, and I'm taping this out of order tonight. This is the first segment that I'm actually taping. Your head just exploded. I know, the magic of the internet and podcasts. I'm hoping so I can get to bed early after I pass along the results from the late game tonight, Oklahoma City against Portland. They're at halftime right now, so I'm excited to check out the second half of that one. But wanted to point out as well that there is a watch party at Motor City Casino tonight. I went to one of those earlier this year. I recommend it. Free food, dollar drinks there at the soundboard. You just got to go online to Ticketmaster, get your ticket for free there. But double check all this stuff on the website, though. I'm not sure that it's the case as far as the free food and dollar drinks still for the playoff one. But go there and hang out with some real, true Pistons fans as well. But here's the task for Dwayne Casey. Real easy one. All you have to do is make a few adjustments to erase that 35-point buffer that Milwaukee has over you in Game 1. You got to go on the road. You probably still won't have Blake Griffin tonight. So go do that. Pretty easy, right? Of course, it's not at all easy. And as Vince Ellis of the Free Press correctly points out on Twitter over the last couple days, this is a huge talent disparity that won't be overcome by a few adjustments. There's no doubt about that. But certainly it's Dwayne's job to do something and to throw his hands up in the air and just try to do something to make this team competitive here in Game 2 and the rest of the series, which should not be a long one going forward. But I wanted to pass along a few of the adjustments that I would make, that I would like to see the Pistons make as well. And after I made this list, I went and saw that Rod Beard of the Detroit News, my sometimes colleague there, kind of two-upped me with his own five adjustments that the Pistons should make. I just had three adjustments they should make, and two of mine were basically three of his, but he has some others in there too, so check that out at DetNews.com, or go ahead and buy a Detroit News newspaper. Go to the 7-Eleven, go to the newsstand, maybe the local bodega, and pick yourself up a copy of the Detroit News. They pay my bills a lot of times, so you should support them as well. And the first adjustment that I would make tonight is very obvious, and it's one that everyone is talking about on the Twitter.com. Pretty much in agreement unanimously around the Pistons fan base right now, and that's to start Luke Kennard. Now, I don't mean that they've missed the boat on starting Luke Kennard all season. This is only kind of a desperate adjustment they would make, and only with the understanding that, of course, that we're assuming here as we talk that Blake Griffin is out again for this game. If Blake does play, keep Luke as the leader of the second unit there. But I kind of went through some of these stats that Luke Kennard has starting and coming off the bench. He's played 63 games this season, and 10 of them were as a starter this year. He is averaging 7.5 points per game and shooting 38.4% field goal percentage and 37.5% on three-pointers during those games that he did start, those 10 games. Now, in the regular season, he did not start 53 games and averaged 10.2 points per game, which is something he has never done in the NBA, which is averaging over 10 points per game this season. Actually finished at 9.7 points per game this regular season. But in addition to the higher points, he's getting 44.7% field goal percentage, excellent, and 39.7% from threes. So quite obviously, and again, the 10 games as a starter, small sample size there. But quite obviously, he was a much more prolific contributor for the Pistons off the bench this year. And that makes sense. If you do the eye test and you watch those games, Blake Griffin, when he did start alongside the Reggie Jacksons and Blake Griffins of the world, Luke Kennard was pretty much lost in the shuffle a little bit. The fourth option on offense, and really couldn't get into much of a rhythm, pretty much relegated him to a standstill shooter, which is in a lot of ways what Wayne Ellington has. Now, these days, Wayne Ellington's asked to do a little bit more than be a standstill shooter, working a little bit of two-man game with Blake Griffin, or on Sunday night a little bit more with Andre Drummond, and also coming off those dribble handoffs and some of those screens and plays run for him as well. But I think Wayne Ellington's a little bit more suited for that role than, you know, Blake Griffin is. But I think that these are desperate times and they call for desperate measures. I think that if you are going to start Thon Maker, and we're going to get into that in a little bit here as well, that you need to switch up and get Luke Kennard into that starting lineup. When you have Bruce Brown and Andre Drummond and Thon Maker all out there together, that's just too much non-offense there, too much non-shot creation there, and it's something that the Pistons have to address. So I think it's a quick fix. Certainly could be characterized as an overreaction, but I don't think so in this case. I would start Luke Kennard tonight, and I have a feeling they will. I think that's a move that the Pistons will make. The second adjustment is to kind of just keep gumming up the Giannis Antetokounmpo, easy for me to say, the coverage on him. Now, of course, there's no way you're going to stop Giannis. He's the presumed MVP this season, and he will continue to scorch the Pistons pretty much throughout the season, throughout the series. But, well, the season really also, if we're being honest. But, I mean, when I'm talking about adjustments, I mean throw everything at him. Keep that zone out there for a bit. Give him the heavy dose of Andre. Andre, to his credit, had a little bit of success with Giannis, made Antetokounmpo settle for jump shots, which is always a win if you're playing defense against the Bucks and Giannis. Throw Glenn Robinson at him when he's in, and I know none of these are good answers. Of course, there's no good answers with the Pistons' roster situation and Giannis's height and basketball situation that he lives in every night, but Bruce Brown, throw him in there. Hell, do weird stuff. Throw Ish Smith on him for one possession just to get in his head and see how that goes, you know, just to kind of feel like, oh, now I have to back this guy down. Now I have to put my butt in him and just go score. Now, of course, he's probably going to score that possession. I'm not suggesting that this is like a long-term solution, but sometimes with those great players, when those guys you can't stop, you have to throw gimmicks at them. Just throw like a crazy, you know, double team at him and run at him with, if you happen to get one of those Bucks, that, like an Ilyasova out there with there, who's a guy who's capable of knocking down shots, but if he ends up with an uncontested three-pointer, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, even if he knocks it down. Again, you're picking the best of a lot of bad options, picking your poison, so to speak, and seriously, just try anything, get Milwaukee out of their rhythm, and just keep mixing up some of the defensive looks, the Giannis looks. He gets throughout the course of a game, which leads me to my third one, and one that's possibly very wrong, but I think that this is actually not really an adjustment from game one. It's actually the lack of an adjustment, but I would stick in game two with Thon Maker. And yes, I did watch game one, and I did talk about on Monday's podcast about how Thon looked confused, bewildered, and pretty much a disaster in game one, 0 for 6 from 3. And I know that this isn't going to be a popular opinion of mine, and it really does defy a lot of the logic and stats, but I'm giving Thon Maker big minutes once again tonight. He is one of the guys that you are evaluating and also giving experience going forward. Not to say that Thon Maker is necessarily in the long-range plans for the Pistons. A lot of holes in that game, a lot of things to clean up, but certainly there is a chance that he could be with this franchise and being a valuable part of this franchise for a number of years. And I even give him a little bit of a mulligan at times on Giannis, and throw Thon at him and see if he can have some success. I think there is some value with the fact that those guys played one-on-one many, many times at the advice of Sean Sweeney. Those guys went after each other. And again, this is not a matchup that the Pistons will have the upper hand in or really any term of sustainable success with. But I think it's more of giving Giannis different looks, giving the Bucks different looks. And I know that there is a school of thought out there in giving Glenn Robinson III, the minutes, maybe even starting him over Thon Maker so you can evaluate him with that team option looming this summer. But honestly, I'm already out enough on Glenn Robinson III. In my mind, that option is already turned down by the Pistons. And if he wants to try to come back and resuscitate his career going forward on a veteran minimum deal, then, and I don't know if he's actually quite qualified for the quote-unquote veteran minimum deal, because I know that I might be like 10 years or something, but Calderon and Zaza Pachulia actually get the maximum of what a veteran minimum could be, if that makes any sense. Through your years of service, you can get a what would be a longer and bigger veteran minimum. So I think that Glenn would actually qualify for a mid-range version of the veteran's minimum. Although when we're talking about a veteran minimums, despite the fact that more money goes to the older guys in those situations, the cap hit is actually the exact same. So there's no cap differentials between veteran and minimum guys, but it's something that the union and the NBA created, mostly the union's behest there, so that older guys can get shots at getting those veteran minimums before younger guys do, and they're more fairly compensated for them, giving their years of service. Now, if you get Luke with the starters over Bruce, I think that makes the offense a little better. I think that you can still stick with Thon and Andre as the starting front court there and give that five-man group a lot of minutes. Maybe you want to shorten this up a little bit. We talk about Luke Kennard and Andre Drummond and Wayne Ellington being out there with the starting unit. Well, yeah, that makes your second bench unit a little bit worse. Well, maybe you find ways to put Reggie Jackson out there with a bench group, which is something we haven't really seen much throughout this season. See if he can run some pick and rolls with some of the guys in the second unit. And stagger minutes so that guys like Andre, Reggie, and Luke Kennard are kind of two at a time out there together on the court. And look, I know the numbers are really bad with Thon Maker out there. Thon, I looked it up, he's 1-for-17 from three in the last six games. He's been about a 30% shooter from three with the Pistons since the trade, and that was down from about 33% when he was with the Bucks before the trade. Big time down from his first year in Milwaukee when he was making about 37% threes, and then really struggled last year below 30%, I believe. Again, Thon was not composed in game one. I think the booing, I think the crowd, I think the atmosphere got to him. Playoff Thon, we know, was unhinged a little bit with Milwaukee, and that effort proved to be something that was a commodity for the Bucks in their playoff series against Boston last year, and I believe the Raptors the year before. But, and in fact, I remember now that, yes, that was the Raptors the year before. But I think they should let him have at least another game, get that experience, and maybe Thon will be a little bit more settled down and channel that excitement and energy into positive things for the Pistons going forward. And again, what we just talked about and what Dwayne Casey faces, none of these things are good options, but I just think there are things that the Pistons should explore going forward tonight in Game 2. Now remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to the Locked On Pistons podcast on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Pistons. Next, we're going to hear from some of the voicemailers and hear what they have to say about what we want to see from the rest of the series with the Pistons, and maybe as we look ahead to the offseason as well. But that's up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day.
Hi, Matt. This is Dan. I'm a caller from Chicago. Pistons fan all my life, so thanks for taking my call. I'm one of the people that I was happy to see the Pistons make the playoffs. I think this debate about them, trying to tank for the lottery is kind of nonsense. I mean, it's really the difference between the 14th pick and the 16th pick, in my opinion. That's not going to change the future of the franchise. I think any playoff experience they get is really valuable, even if it's a experience of getting swept by the best team in the league. My question for you is really, what changed from their stretch where they're in mid-February to March when they were, winning 12 out of 14 and they were one of the hottest shooting three-point teams in the league? That's what they need to get back to somehow. They need to interchannel that run that they went on in order to even make this an interesting series at all. Luke Kennard, Langston Galloway, Thon Maker, Wayne Ellington, they were on fire. They were, couldn't miss, and now it seems like they're still getting open shots, but they're just not making them. So what has changed other than the Blake Griffin injury, and what do they got to do to make this an interesting series? Thanks for taking my call, Matt.
Thank you to Dan from Chicago. Love getting the new callers in the mix. Dan's talking about right after the All-Star break when the Pistons got really hot. There was a 9-game stretch right after the break when the Pistons shot 42.9% from three, went 8-1 in those games, kind of extrapolating that a little bit further. In a 17-game stretch, they shot 39.3% from three, went 11-6 in those games. I think the biggest reason for that is the streakiness and the variance that you get from Langston Galloway. Put this in perspective. In a 15-game stretch after the All-Star break, which is pretty much those same spans that I was talking about, Langston Galloway was a 54.4% three-point shooter and putting up 4.5 a game. So it wasn't like he was throwing them up at a high percentage on low attempts. If you take those 15 games out of the season, and we're talking about 65 games here still, Langston shot 31.4% from three. Settles in for the season at 35.5%, right below league average, which when it's all you do in major ways to contribute to this team is shooting threes. I mean, I just really do think that Langston's streakiness makes up for those numbers, kind of made those team numbers in large part look the way it did. And that's what you get. You're paying him $7 million a year. By the way, everyone talks about the John Luehr contract, but I think the Langston Galloway contract given by Stan Van Gundy is underrated for how horrendous it is and how much damage it's done to this team. And in that same stretch, that same period of time, by the way, Reggie Jackson, right after the All-Star break, which, break for Reggie Jackson. What a novel idea. After not playing for nine days during the All-Star break, Reggie went out and shot 44.4% from three in the nine-game stretch immediately following the All-Star break. And he went out and played 82 games for some reason. Outside of those games, Reggie Jackson almost 10% lower at 35.9%, which is still pretty good. And kudos to Reggie Jackson for shooting 37% from three on the season, a career-high three-point percentage from him. But to answer your question, Dan, I think overall the biggest answer to it is the Pistons were rolling in large part because this was a soft part of the schedule. Their winning streak early was a remarkably soft schedule. The second part of the season when they went on the long losing streak and then struggled into December and into the early part of January before the win against the Clippers on January 12th on the road, that was because that was a brutal stretch of games right there. And Blake tried to carry them through to the end of January, scoring a lot. Didn't really work there. But then they had the home debacle to the Clippers and went nuts after that in a positive way into the break and past the break. Again, this was against a soft schedule. And then it got tougher again at the end, and they lost a bunch of those. Really, I think with remarkable accuracy, I think you can look at this season for the Pistons and say they really did clean up on the soft portions of the schedule, and they really did get beat up by the tough ones. And I know that's in large part the case for a lot of NBA teams out there, but really, I think with remarkable accuracy, I think that they really did kind of fall in line with what you might expect. I'll go through some of the numbers here in the next few days and see if I can back up my claims that they were remarkably good against some of the best, the worst teams in the league comparatively to the average NBA team, and remarkably bad against some of the good teams, although they did have some nice wins in there. Maybe worse against the middle and just kind of bad against the top. We'll go through some of the numbers and maybe come to some conclusions there. But long story short, that's how you go 500. I think it's really as simple as that. Now, I got another call from Breishan out in Philly, but I'm going to save him for another day going forward. He's got some teams that the Pistons fans could be rooting for. Looking at rosters around the league, I like his take there, but we've kind of run out of time today. So thanks for listening. Remember, you can subscribe to the show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Pistons. Well, let's see what happens tonight, 8 o'clock at Milwaukee, Game 2. We got Pistons playoff basketball. Maybe try to forget about Sunday and see what happens tonight, see if the Pistons can give some effort and make the Bucks flinch a little bit. That's really all we want, right? Make them shake in their boots a little bit and just see what happens when they have to deal with a little bit of tough play on the other side of the court. So this is your host, Matt Shook of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying thanks for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow with a full recap. Game 2, Pistons-Bucks tonight.